So I've been talking about this concept called Allbound for a while. And I think in the echo chamber that is B2B marketing on LinkedIn, people are like, what's the framework? What's the playbook for Allbound? And I'm like, it's more like an ethos.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our inaugural season of Funnel Vision. We're going to be speaking with leaders in digital marketing that are thinking big and leaving their mark on their industry. My name is Paula Mejia. I've been a marketer for what feels like an ever, but it's just been a decade. I also want to present to you guys Sasha, who's joined us today.
Hey, guys. I am Sasha Belenke, also at Wix, part of the Wix Studio Enterprise team. You know, at Wix Studio, we spend a lot of time thinking about the challenges that are faced by marketers, from supporting increasingly long customer journeys to ever-shrinking resources, and the abundance of new technologies aimed at addressing all of these pain points.
And you know, as marketers ourselves, we also face these pain points. We know the feeling of magic when a campaign comes together, but we also know when it falls flat and when it took 17 rounds of revision and then legal got back to you and they were like, no, not that. So we wanted to create a place for marketers like ourselves to exchange ideas, learn from each other, and kind of manage this ever-changing, super fast evolving landscape. So if you could relate to any of these things, we hope that Funnel Vision is a place for you.
Amazing. Today, we're thrilled to be joined by Jillian Alls, VP of Marketing at Qwit.
Jillian, it's so great to have you today.
Thank you so much for the invite. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you came to be at Qwit? I understand that you started kind of off as an SEO specialist before that. So just to hear more about you and get to know you better.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I think I'm maybe ashamed to admit I'm approaching 20 years in marketing almost. It feels crazy. But yeah, as you mentioned, I got my start in digital marketing way back when, and really was kind of doing things as like coding HTML email templates and managing keywords for Google Ads and SQL database and optimizing websites for SEO. Got my start in digital, but I've done branding, have done product-led growth, sales-led growth, partner-led growth, all different kinds of things in different sizes of companies. So consider myself a pretty well-rounded marketer at this point. And I've been at Qwit for about a year now, almost a year and a half, and it's been fantastic. We're a team of 12 marketers.
So Jillian, I want to dive right in and get to what you have called your marketing ethos.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I've been talking about this concept called Allbound for a while. And I think in the echo chamber that is B2B marketing on LinkedIn, people are like, what's the framework? What's the playbook for Allbound? It's more like an ethos. Like it's not
that.
Necessarily a prescriptive set of things to do. For me, it's about kind of, I see marketing as serving at the pleasure of the growth of the company, right? So however that looks by stage, by type of company, by products, by go-to-market motion, all of these things could impact that. But marketing kind of has this unique skill set and almost obligation to kind of be this glue that really helps the organization grow in terms of supporting the entire customer journey, as well as reporting back to the company. What's the market doing? What's the market saying? These kind of things. So we're at this like precipice of both sides of the business, if you will. I think I've done a lot of work with my management teams over the past few years to show that it is so much more than inbound. And of course, we can measure however we want. We can use attribution models, but ultimately, it's about identifying where we can work smarter together in the go-to-market kind of motion, if you will. So working closely together with sales and marketing alignment, another big topic falls within that ethos for me. But just as much as, hey, products, you know, I've got product marketing on my team. These are some of the things that, you know, we're experiencing. We want to do some message testing on this, working closely with product or helping CS. Like, you know, they're being tasked more and more with generating revenue than they have in the past and retaining customers, upselling them. Again, something marketing should definitely be supporting with and helping with. Doesn't mean that I see marketing as doing everybody's job, but definitely kind of stepping in and helping and finding ways to work smarter, not harder together. I walked into Qwit and all of our high intent inbound form submissions were going straight to the sales team, which I think a lot of people are like, yeah, great. They're ready to talk to sales. They should go to sales. But sales is sitting multi-threaded deals, you know, in meetings, doing the things you're supposed to do, and this little measly form submission comes in, and it's like they're not built with the sequences and the processes to make sure that if they don't get in touch right away that they follow up and things like that. So we've done a proof of concept, and it's gone really, really well. It's, you know, of course, increased our speed to lead was the original intention. Just a small example of one thing that we've implemented here recently as an example of what I would see falling under my ethos, that is Altbound.
I love it. I think one of you mentioned a lot of things that I want to unpack here, but one of them is around ethos versus playbook.
Mm-hmm.
This is something also that's kind of been top of mind for me. I'm also on the LinkedIn B2B ecosystem, whatever it is. One of the things I find kind of frustrating is that it feels like once a playbook brings a win to a company, all the other companies feel like they have to replicate mm-hmm. it, or they are missing out, or they are not doing it right. And I think what you're touching on is the importance of testing for your specific situation, mm-hmm. your specific sales team, what your AEs are doing, right? What is their level of deal flow versus, you know, maybe the ones in Wix Studio, for example, would have more bandwidth, and that wouldn't be the right approach for them. And, you know, when you are reading these posts and hearing interviews, it can be so reductive to just say like, oh, well, this worked, so therefore I have to do it. There's a lot of kind of pressure involved in that. And so I love this concept of the ethos that is, you know, it's not a one size fits all, but more of an approach that you have in place. So I think that's super interesting.
Do you feel like just having ethos, framework, whatever we want to call it, like how does that shape your day-to-day decisions? Just having like even articulated that to the, you know, LinkedIn-osphere and to your own team, what does that mean for you guys?
For me, I have two teams. I have the leadership team and I have my team, right? And you know, when I kind of look at problems that my marketing team is facing, I look at it through the lens of leadership because I need to understand the impact on the wider organization. I might and should know things that are going on in other parts of the organization. So it might not be the favorite decision for my marketing team, but it's ultimately what's best for the company. Or, you know, based on focus and prioritization, I know that we're not going to be able to get the help we need from RevOps to implement this because I know that they're sitting with, you know, this and these kind of things. So for me, it's about keeping kind of a wide perspective on the company ambition and workload, if you will, and not so much worrying about keeping up with the Joneses of LinkedIn. But to your point, Paula, it needs to be seen through the lens of where you are in your company and the tech stack that you have. And
you said the magic word. See, the magic word you said was tech stack. Okay. So we both work at tech companies. No, I think it's really important because you talked about there are two teams and there's a tech stack. And I kind of feel like those are the pieces that we have as marketers to play with that and budget, right? So, but resources, whatever. So you have your leadership team, which is giving you a North Star. And you have your people on the ground who are executing, and you have your tech stack. So I want to talk about how you manage that. Like, what does your tech stack look like? What is working for you? Where are you like, if I could, you know, find a genie, this is the thing that would unlock things for me.
Yeah.
I'm always curious what's top of mind for marketers who are out there living the dream.
Yeah, I don't know that anyone is. You always step in and you're like, ooh, it's like, yeah, you know, and I work in B2B scale-up, so it's different than a company like Wix. Like, you're kind of just like, well, you know, we're likely to exit in the next 2 years. Like, how much work do we want to put into, like, re-architecting our infrastructure when we might be bought in 2 years or something like that? There's always this hesitancy or, oh, like, is it really going to, you know, increase sales by 20% by doing this?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest struggle I have is we have two CRMs. We use HubSpot for our BD and outbound outreach and all of our forms now flow through HubSpot, but our sales and CS teams are on Dynamics.
Interesting.
Already there, we've got competing systems and different thoughts on what the single source of truth is. It should be Dynamics, but just getting that two-way sync, don't really have a two-way sync. We have a one-way sync. It's not ideal. So it means that a lot of the times when I see these great ideas on LinkedIn, I'm like, yeah, could be nice, but I'm not getting that anytime. Like, it's just not even worth like entertaining, you know, like I've had to accept that and make what we can work. At the same time, we have an awesome RevOps team who's really good at Power BI, and that's opened a whole new world for me in that they can, you know, make magic work between Google Analytics and our Dynamics data, right? So there is a where there's a will, there's a way. But I don't go to bed dreaming of a specific software to solve my problems.
What problem do you go to bed thinking about? That's the one that I want to know, with the software.
Some of the biggest things top of mind for me right now are distribution. So we have great content. We have great things to say. Would love more feedback on, like, if it's resonating. We sell to a technical persona, so it's not the echo chamber of B2B marketing on LinkedIn, that its own beast, right? So distribution is just hard, right? You need to understand whether or not you want to own an audience and build that, and it takes a lot of work, or you want to tap into an existing audience, and then the challenges that come with that, and the fact that, you know, generative AI is changing things at a rapid pace, that you just don't want to sound like yet another thing that no one wants to listen to, and how to be authentic and not pitch slap people, all of the balance that you need to kind of to work through. And so I think that's, like, one of the bigger challenges we have right now is, how do we get in front of the eyeballs we want to get in front of in a true and authentic way that is sustainable for us as a team? We are, you know, trying to do two things. We're trying to still drive inbound, but we're also trying to support our sales and BD teams with, you know, one to few account-based marketing. And we're global. We've got all the regions and countries in the world. I mean, the world is our oyster in so many ways. So that focus becomes just a huge thing that really needs a lot of attention to figure out where can my team move the needle. So again, for an example, I'm like, well, you know what, government, they're paid to pick up the phone, keep going all outbound all day long. But where, you know, I support from a marketing perspective is maybe tapping into those audiences that don't want to talk to sales until they absolutely have to. And it's about self-education, and it's about getting the content out there that's, you know, I can't fake it till I make it in technical content. If I were selling to marketers, sure. But my team can't. We need real subject matter expertise, and we need to make sure that it's in the right places, back to distribution, and then that it, you know, resonates. And getting that feedback is just something that is, you know, still on my wish list. Somehow I feel like I haven't quite nailed it.
Well, I think you just said something that really goes back to Paola's point about every company needing to find the right balance in terms of that, like, integrated all-bound approach. And depending on your audiences, depending on the various market pressures, you know, that you're facing. And so on that point, you know, I'd love to hear from you. What are some of the market pressures that you've seen that are driving you guys more towards that all-bound approach? Like, you know, what's pushing you in that direction?
I mean, I think there's macro stuff going on for most B2B SaaS companies at this stage, and that there's a consolidation in the market. People have loved and invested in tools and technology, and everyone now is being squeezed to kind of really understand the ROI and impact of their investments. And I think it just feels like the market is smaller, so therefore we have to work smarter, right? Like, right. There's no budget hanging on leaves of trees. It's just, you know, you really need to be building a business case for the CFO, right? Alongside with, you know, because we've done MedPick training this year as an organization. It's an opportunity coaching framework for enterprise. So that's been an adjustment. But you really learn that there are so many stakeholders in a given sales cycle. And again, how does marketing with all of that?
When can they address every single stakeholder, right? And you have to prioritize,
yes,
right, based on your level of influence in the company, which you may find changes depending mm-hmm. on the company you're engaging with.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to go back to your distribution question. So you have this huge challenge. What are you doing to solve it, right? Because, like, that's the $1 million question.
That is the $1 million question.
I want to know if you solve it.
We're talking a little bit about it. We're weighing some options, looking more like tapping into existing audiences rather than trying to create our own. We're not that big of a brand. We're you know, more of a point solution than kind of an ecosystem platform where we have multiple things to talk about. We do have some great partners, and I see a lot of potential in working with our partners on co-marketing and tapping into their audiences. Still need to have a unique point of view and something to say. And I think we can work with talking to our customers more to create some of that content as well, to bring that kind of user-led or kind of customer-led content, where I think the market would much rather hear from customers than from us, right? So investigating something like Bright Vision, is that, you know, something that we should be investing in as a webinar kind of platform where there's people checking it out? So what do I do as a software buyer? You know, whoever's watching this, I'm sure I'm going to have like 10 SDRs tomorrow. But like, is it working for other people, right? And trying to do that due diligence to understand if that's, you know, something we should do. But also getting some of my team, like one of the things that's eye-opening for me looking into 2025 planning has been like, I have a pretty incredible team that's been, is quite senior for the organization, being a scale-up. Like someone on my team has been here for almost 10 years. And
wow,
that's a long time for this kind of company. Yeah. And just the enormous potential I have in the team that I have, in that they understand the product in and out. Like, yes, I have a product marketing person, but when you work in this kind of level of a company, everyone becomes a little bit of a product marketer. So helping, you know, drive more of our creative process, I had outsourced our kind of LinkedIn demand gen last year. I'm moving that back in-house this year to put more money into the distribution and bring in, because I just think my team is in a great spot to do that. So there's been some really nice pockets of aha moments when taking this hard look at what we need to do. But I don't know that I have all the answers or solved for it yet, other than what do we do best? We test.
Yeah, being able to manage like the conversation your team is initiating, I think, is an interesting challenge to have, because it's not just one, you know, with marketing service, just one touch point. So can you just clarify, though, you said at some point that the SDR, BDR function was dealing with leads. Is that something that sits on your team now?
No. So it's a kind of a matrix thing, if you will. But again, back to this ethos and all about, and like having a really great relationship with my commercial leaders. We're like, yeah, this totally makes sense. I don't need to manage them. Like, that's not, I mean, if I had to and you asked me to, sure. But like, that's, you know, it's fine where it lives. And I don't think you need everything under one leader in order to work. You just need the leaders aligned. Yeah. That's all it requires.
This is actually what I wanted to ask you. Like, what does it look like in practice to implement this strategy? You know, like the various teams, how do they fit together? How have things shifted since you've implemented more of an all-around strategy?
So we have three regional kind of commercial leaders that manage all the revenue in the region. So they're responsible for BD, new sales, and customer success. And then I worked with the head of North America and the head of EMEA to test this APAC. We haven't implemented yet because actually our sales team sits in Denmark supporting APAC, which is time zone wise kind of crazy. So we thought, let's do this first with these teams and really just align on what it looks like. How does it impact their comp? How does it impact their time that they have to work on their outbound metrics and these kind of things? Like, how do we make sure that they're just as motivated? And I think the proof has been in the pudding in that they just get a lot of energy out of it. And we have made sure that there is compensation or at least recognition for the inbound part of it. We had to look at how do we support this from a process perspective. So back to Paula's love for marketing operations, it's people, process, and technology, right? So you had to really get...
She really does. She really does love
marketing. I got her. I'm picking up what she's putting down.
It's true. It's sincere.
But we had to draw that up, right? So we needed to make sure that they had the proper processes and technology in order to support this. So, you know, a big project went into making sure that the HubSpot flows worked so that they got assigned the lead. They knew exactly what they needed to do. We did training, not just from a marketing perspective, but we had our AEs come in and train how they interact with inbounds. And like, the request can be a little bit different if they want pricing or just to see the product, like what that nuance looks like. And then we've done like iterative follow-ups, right? Like, how is it going? And, you know, making sure that everyone feels comfortable. And there's still like hiccups here and there. Like, some are really not comfortable with the pricing ask, right? This whole enterprise pricing. And, you know, as a buyer, you're just like, can you just give me a ball range, like a ballpark range or something? Right. And so we're trying to figure that out. And then again, on the localization perspective, how do we deal for that? Like, we have, you know, landing pages and forms in Italian, Spanish, German. We have BDRs that speak those. What happens if we only have one that speaks Italian? He's on vacation. What do we do? Like, all of these like things. And sometimes we had to look at it and say, nice problem to have. Let's figure out when we get there, how to deal with it. But try to think of all the hiccups that we could experience and solve for them in advance and work with like the BD team leaders so that they felt responsible and involved in the process as well. So it was really, it took us probably 2 months to design it and a month of like rollout. And now we're 3 months into it. And we've seen at least the leading metrics have hit where we want. So our conversion rate from like the form submission to a lead has increased to the level we had hoped. In fact, actually maybe too much. So we had to kind of like, okay, are they getting too eager to qualify this? So, you know, again, adjustment. And now I think the people have really gotten their sea legs, and our sales cycles are a little longer. So we're still waiting to ensure that the bottom of the funnel, if you will, follows through, but all looks good. So looking to continue it next year and implement it into the APAC region as well.
Exciting.
You mentioned, you know, that you're still mostly measured on inbound. So, you know, how do you still like maintain that like integrated holistic perspective? And like, you know, are there other things that you think you should be measured on, not just the inbound?
Yeah. Well, I do consider myself, I look at the entire company performance as a leader, as I should, right? But of course, it just, I think that the pleasure I have is if inbound's making their number, no one questions it, right? Then it allows you to talk about anything you want. That's always the case. And it's always like on a global level, it's great, but there's a pocket that's not performing as intended here that we need to dig into. And so it is sometimes where I find like, don't really want to present this to the board because we do more than this, for example. Like it just, sometimes you just need to choose your words carefully. And like, well, inbound's CAC is so great. I'm like, yeah, it is, but we do more than that. So our salaries go to more than just the inbound number. So it's actually even better than that, right? So I think it's just being clever and again, alignment with your leadership. I have a great relationship with our CEO, and I haven't really run into someone disagreeing. But of course, it does, like I say, help if on the whole you're doing okay on the
So the advice is, make sure you're meeting those inbound targets, and then you can do whatever you want.
kind of. Unfortunately, yeah. I don't have a magic bullet.
Part of the point of the all-bound approach is that inbound, you only really get those numbers when you are marketing holistically. And, unless you're maybe a HubSpot that is so established and such a market leader, then you really need to invest in some more of the traditional outbound or whatever it is, your Reddit, whatever it is that you're doing that isn't that, the leads just coming in because they happen to know your...
Yeah, absolutely. Right. It is a leap of faith when you do the planning. Like, I think that all the things that we're doing in aggregate will help grow the inbound number because it's the right thing to do. And again, maybe someone listening to this podcast who sells attribution software will be hammering because, you know, I don't need it. I got it figured out for the most part. But, I think it's figuring out that like rising tides lift all ships, right? That's how we look at it. And there will always be in my career a pocket of something that's not performing, whether it's a channel or it's a region. Nothing is just all green at once. And I've learned to lean into it, learn from it, understand it, make sure it's not, you know, an epidemic that's about to spread or something like that. But that there's just variance in markets and there's variance in seasonality, and being a horizontal platform has both its benefits and its challenges when it comes to that kind of thing. So it's just about really learning your ICP in and out and when you're most likely to be successful from a seasonality perspective, these kind of things. And the more data you have, yes, the better you are at predicting what's likely to happen. But I do think that as a whole, everything that we're doing in marketing should be helping drive both inbound, but also make our outbound teams more successful.
Have you seen any resistance from any of your teams? I mean, I know you have a good relationship with leadership, but like, is there resistance to like doing things in a different way or?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Not to get into your dirty laundry too much, but.
I am challenged by our head of RevOps, which is a healthy challenge once in a while, but it's like, plant the seeds, you know, work on it and learn which battles to kind of pick, so to speak, right? And, build that relationship over time so that it's not an automatic no. But I, of course, I've met resistance. Now I'm meeting more just questions. And I think I build my credibility in that I also question. It's fair enough. Yes, this is my baby, but like, let's look at it. Like, let's see what the data tells us. I'm always like, data only tells us what's happened, right? It's not telling us what's going to happen.
Can you give us an example to make me feel better?
Of course. No, this whole example that I've been given around this, you know, inbound via BD was just like, but why? Like, you know, and also because it required some fundamental changes and comp models, like all of the things. And people were like, is this really going to lift our business enough to justify the work that's required? And I was just like, yes, it might be more of a long-term game in that we want to go more enterprise. Everyone believes this, says this. That means we need to open up the time for our AEs to do the things that requires them to work enterprise-sized deals. They're not going to have time to do this. They shouldn't have the time to do this, right? So this is, it fits better in this part of the organization. So that was kind of needing to coax our CFO on a little bit of that, our revenue operations on how we get it supported from a kind of a process and data perspective. And we're sitting here now, and there is some signs of other decline in the organization. It's not to do with inbound. I mean, it looks great. But it's like, well, since we did that, now this is going down. Like, okay, let's find out if it's causation or correlation. So now we're digging in on that. And I'm the first one to say, well, absolutely. If it's hurting other things, then no, we shouldn't be doing it, because again, we need to look at it holistically. So I think it yes, I've met resistance on this whole bound thing. I think everyone buys into it theoretically, but when it comes to kind of brass tacks, it's like, oh, I have to change. I don't like that.
It's important that someone is challenging you, because other people may have that same question, and it forces you to articulate your rationale, and that's good for it's good for your team.
But I think that there is a tension, I think, that marketers are dealing with all the time, and it's that, you know, you mentioned it. If you're in a go-to-market team and leads are coming in, all's gravy.
Yeah.
But when it's not gravy, and you have to try a lot of things, that's when it's more difficult to get buy-in, I think, for riskier things, which is ironic because, like, obviously what is happening isn't working in some way. Like that Jaguar ad, which I know a lot of people hated. I didn't hate it. But at first I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a joke ad.
Wait, tell us a little bit about the ad. So set the stage.
Okay, so this ad, it was like an insane, wasn't it? It felt insane, right? You see this, it's a commercial. Doesn't feature a car, and it's like very beautiful, like very ethnically diverse models walking in what I can only describe like a Zoolander like video, where everyone's like copy nothing, like these Afro things that mean nothing. It was absolutely bizarre, and you know, it started getting a lot of bad media. Also good, right? Some people really liked it, and at first I really thought someone shared it with me, and I was like, oh, it's a joke. Fake ad. Why are you sharing? Why are you wasting my time? Yeah. Got leads to bring in. I don't sell cars. And then, you know, whatever. I was doing childcare, something not work related. And I was like, no, that was very deliberate, because I know what it's like to change, you know, like the menu on a website. Mm-hmm. And everyone's got an opinion. And if you do any kind of rebrand at any company, you know, your CEO, your board's going to be involved. And I'm like, if I was in that marketing team, like, there's no way I could have gotten even to through the storyboard of this ad without running it by like all of legal, the board, da, da, da. And so, you know, my take on it now is that like they very deliberately did something radical that they knew was going to piss off a lot of people who are traditionalists about the Jaguar brand, even people who like never intended to buy a Jag.
Yeah. I think you were still thinking about it a couple hours later when you were hanging out with your kids. So it worked.
Getting my point. My point is like they did something insane, but they did it on purpose to change the narrative. And so everyone's saying like threw away this brand, and I'm like, you didn't. You threw away something that wasn't working. And then they looked into it a little bit, and it looks like they had shut down sales for their their existing car model because they're going all in on this other thing. Like something wasn't working, and they're like, we keep doing what we're doing. It's not like we're going to succeed. So we're going to do something absolutely bananas.
Really bananas. Burn it all down.
maybe we'll get this new audience of like millennial women who probably weren't a traditional buyer of Jaguar. Anyway, I respect them because they tried something different. And I think in marketing, there is that tension that you know, you have to meet the whatever deliverable goal target is. But the moment you kind of stray from the accepted path, particularly people who are not in marketing, are going to look at you like you're a mad person until you can prove them wrong. But Lillian, you said, you know, data only shows you what happened in the past. You have to be allowed to take risks in marketing, and that is very much leadership.
Absolutely.
And so I think there's so much about like leadership roles in marketing that, of course, there's a lot of marketing skill and things you learn over time, but I think stakeholder management and like being able to convince your CFO and your CEO, like, I need to take a gamble. It doesn't have to be my annual budget, but I need to set aside this amount to try my Reddit ads, to try my crazy rebrand, whatever, because while maybe this part of the funnel is working, this one, it's not doing what I would like it to do. And if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm
definition of insanity, right? It's just continuing to do something and expecting a different result.
And yet,
yet we do. We're all a little crazy. This is like the benefit of defining an ethos, right? Like it says something about your intentionality, and it creates this space in which you can take risks because you're now looked at as having some sort of like intentional, you know, way of operating. So it may not make sense to everyone right away, but they at least think, well, you know, Jillian's not just doing random stuff here. Like she has some kind of vision for how this is all supposed to fit together and the new things that we should be trying. So yeah,
absolutely.
I think we all need to be developing our own marketing ethos. That's what I'm going to be thinking about after this episode is what is my marketing ethos?
I think Paula's has something to do with operations.
Definitely, my ethos is definitely how much output you're getting for your input. Like, mm-hmm. I think that for me is kind of the defining, even marketing. My life, I have three.
Life ethos.
My life ethos. Does the input, you know, justify the output? And if it doesn't, you need to readjust and then something in the formula is off.
I have this conversation with a few of my team members often: is the juice worth the squeeze? Right? It's, we all want to do the right thing. We all want to do the great thing. It's just, in the end, when we are pressured on budget and resources and stuff, then sometimes, to the other point, you kind of do need to take the leap of faith and say, well, I sure hope so, because we're doing it.
You only know if you try.
Yeah.
Only know if you try. We spent a lot of the first couple months of this year trying to squeeze more leads out of our inbound funnel because everyone thought, like, we're getting so many. Like, we just need to figure out how to, like, qualify them better, whatever. And so we went all into that. And after a couple of months, we're like, no, that was the amount of juice that was there.
That was what we could do.
And more fruit.
We need more fruit.
We're gonna go need some oranges and
some more trees.
Exactly. That was really like that was really the conversation internally. And then it opened a lot of conversations around how do you do that? How do you do that, especially when you are a relatively well-known brand for something? How do you plant those trees? Keep working that metaphor.
It's the demand gen, right? So it's how do you start creating more demand for your product? And sometimes if you're only known for one thing, you have to start talking about the other things that make up the one thing, right? So if you're just known for the website, but you have all these other things, you know, marketing suite of software that, you know, empowers marketers, then you should start talking about that more somehow, right? So those are definitely conversations that I think a lot of marketers are having with themselves, if not with their leadership teams as well.
Absolutely. Well, Jillian, we have a couple minutes left. And so I want to quickly transition here to our last couple questions. We would love to hear from you. I mean, this conversation has been fascinating. I think there's been so many takeaways here. Love your approach to Allbound. Love the very idea of having a marketing ethos and what that does for your outlook and the way that you communicate with your team and with leadership. But I'd like to know, because I think that this is something that our listeners and our viewers would be really interested in. Where are you taking your inspiration? Can you leave us with someone to follow, something to read, and something to listen to?
Okay. This is where I am terrible because I hate reading business books. Like I can't. I fall asleep. I've tried. Now ChatGPT exists, so if people mention a book, I just go get the cliff notes. The latest one being, and now I can't remember the title, it's just the McKinsey way of like presenting, essentially, where it's like you kind of present the conclusion and then you build it up. That's a great tip for leadership. In terms of who to follow, right now I'm really digging a guy named Anthony Perry. He's on like the product marketing side of things, positioning sides. I think super just practical, great tips that really speak to me that we've been looking at as a team and getting some inspiration from. What to listen to? I come from that generation of, I did subscribe to the whole Chris Walker kind of grow up, whatever. I think a lot of marketers have gotten a lot of inspiration from there. Well, listen to what gives you energy, because I think honestly, this whole, like, we all want to get ideas from each other and energy. It's just, it, at the end of the day, you need the energy. So what brings you the energy? For me, it's listening to music that is probably too young for me to listen to anymore and running, trying to feel young, helps me. And it makes me a better marketer because I use it as like a meditation to open up my mind and think about things differently. So it might seem very, I don't know that it sounds cliche, but it's not for me always about relying on other people to find the inspiration, but also finding it within my own talent.
That's totally fair. I mean, your inspiration may be outside of marketing, and then, you know, you bring all those good feelings into the professional side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jillian, thank you. That is it for this episode of Funnel Vision. You can find us on all the popular podcast platforms, and we'll be posting the full interview on YouTube under the Wix Studio page. You can also find us at our content hub, along with a lot of other great resources for marketers.
Thank you so much, Sasha and Paulo. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Jillian. Thank you. And do if we want to follow you, where are you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Jillian Owls. I'm pretty much the only Jillian Owls out there, I'm pretty sure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Jillian.
Thank you.